So, tonight, I'm going to talk about faith and the effort of non-effort in the context of two of the readings that we did tonight. The guidance in the absolute practice of Zazen and affirming faith in mind. We're also going to talk about Shikantaza, the Zen practice of just sitting, which is essentially what the Reb Andersen piece, which is called, in its uncompressed version, is called A Ceremony for the Encouragement of Zazen. It's largely what he's talking about, Shikantaza. So, there's a really important way in which our practice of Zazen, our practice of showing up to this moment, is a practice of entrusting. It's a practice of entrusting ourselves to ourselves, entrusting our practice to our practice, and the universe to the universe. In a couple of ways that we will touch upon, Shikantaza is, in important ways, an expression of faith. And this kind of faith, this big faith, this big entrusting, is not a kind of faith that is antithetical to doubt. This kind of faith can exist at the exact same time as doubt. The Shinshin Ming, the affirming faith mind, has a couple of excellent passages describing this kind of faith. If mind does not discriminate, all things are as they are, as one. To go to this mysterious source frees us from all entanglement. When all is seen with equal mind, to our self-nature we return. To enter this true empty world, immediately affirm not to. In this not to, all is the same, with nothing separate or outside. So, Sun Tzan, the third great ancestor of Zen, who wrote the Shinshin Ming, gives us the advice to immediately affirm not to, as an expression of faith. What is that not to? That's the not to of this mind and enlightenment, of beings and Buddhas, of our messed up, caught up confusion, and the perfection of thusness. The Dharmakaya, just as it is. Particularly this phrase, when all is seen with equal mind, that's an interesting phrase. And I was reading a piece today by Kosho Uchiyama, a Japanese Zen teacher of the 20th century, whom you all should read if you have not. And in Japanese, the word samadhi, which is not a word that you hear talked about in the Boundless Way presentations of Zen a great deal, but it is sometimes concentrated, it is sometimes translated as meditative absorption or concentration. And when it's translated that way, the Japanese word we're translating is zanmai, which is the one Japanese pronunciation of samadhi. But the word samadhi in Japanese also can be written and translated toji, which means to hold or see all things equally. So when we're holding the mind of Zazen, which receives every moment equally without our judgment or aversion, our grasping or our clinging. In the Reb Anderson piece, he says, if we're enlightened, we sit still in the midst of enlightenment with no preference for it. If we're deluded, we sit still in the middle of delusion with no aversion to it. That's a perfect expression of samadhi. That's the samadhi that doesn't require that we have any special state of mind. That's the samadhi of holding all things equally, of holding also our preferences and our aversions equally. We don't need to not have preferences, not have aversions, not have enlightenment, not have delusions. But when they come, we hold them all equally. We receive each manifestation of ourselves, each manifestation of the universe in this moment, repeatedly. Uchiyama also gives the definition of Toji as the mind and the environment are innately one, which is, and this practice of entering into that space by immediately affirming not to. And part of the way we affirm not to is letting go of our committed, convicted attachment that this can't be it. That this mind can't be the Buddha mind. That this moment can't actually be perfect. We're so sure that's true. And, you know, there's a way in which the practice of immediately affirming not to, it doesn't, it's a practice to just try, to just do. It's not that you have to do it right or well. It actually works even if you hold the belief at the same time that you can't do it, that you can't affirm that it's not two, that you're certain that they aren't two. Even with that mind, you can immediately affirm not two. So, Zazen, Shikantaza especially, is a practice of intimately inhabiting this moment, intimately inhabiting our lives. One of the things that the Reb Anderson piece makes so clear to us is that this Zazen is not in thinking, nor is it marred by thinking. And this is what the Heart Sutra talks about the language in the Heart Sutra says that prajna paramita is not stained, not pure. Not pure or not stained. It's not in the content of your thoughts, nor do this content of your thoughts push it any further away. It's not in thinking, it's not marred by thinking. It's in an important way beyond thinking. It's in a larger, super category than those thoughts. Also, it's not in effort. This is another thing that the Reb Anderson makes so clear. We can't do it ourselves, and no one else can do it for us. So one of the things that this talk is going to also touch into is faith, particularly the kind of faith called Shinjin, which is the Japanese name of affirming faith in mind. It's the Shinjin Mei, the song of Shinjin, the song of true and trusting, of true faith. And this true faith is the faith that is the sole characteristic, the sole non-practice of the Pure Land sect of Buddhism founded by the Japanese teacher Shinran. And Shinran has this to say about this about Shinjin, true and trusting. Abiding in the stage of the truly the practicer of Shinjin abides in the stage of the truly settled. We have already been grasped by Amida, never to be abandoned. So the way Shin Buddhism talks about the Dharma path is with the language of other power. Amida Buddha does it all for you. There's nothing you have to do. Zen talks about it from the perspective of self-power, that we and this is what comes into the language of letting go or letting be or practicing. But at the same time, Zen also undermines the practice of self-power. And this is what we also see repeatedly in the language of the Reb Anderson piece. So, part of the practice of Zazen, part of the practice of Shikantaza is to just let thoughts rest undisturbed as they are. Let them rest undisturbed in their arising. Let them rest undisturbed in their departing. So I'm going to now turn to the unredacted version of the ceremony for the encouragement of Zazen. And I'm actually going to read the version that we recite here, the Guidance in the Absolute Practice of Zazen, is my own kind of compression of this 10-page chapter. And all of the lines that I'm going to quote are lines that I didn't include in that compression, but it's the same piece nonetheless. Although some of them aren't. So, we recite, Zazen is just being upright and unmoving in the midst of the practice of concentration, in the midst of delusion, in the midst of enlightenment. And our practice of freedom is just being upright and present amid the chaos and confusion and fear and pain and suffering and loss and change of our lives. Nothing about Dharma practice makes those things go away, but amid them we can be free. As long as we are engaged in a self-improvement meditation, we continue to be trapped in ourselves. When we are free of self-improvement projects, we are free of ourselves. That's Reb Anderson. So, what are the ways in which you're secretly subverting your Zazen practice into self-improvement? What are the what is your secret practice, your secret agenda in your Zazen? Are you really just sitting? Are you really just showing up to this moment? Or are you practicing a kind of subtle form of denial, a subtle form of rejection, of pushing this moment away? Of trying to be a better you. And it's lovely to have these aspirations. These aspirations are important. But Zazen doing Zazen to improve yourself doesn't improve yourself. Doing Zazen without the agenda of self-improvement, paradoxically, is what brings about the change in our lives. So again, Shinran has this to say about aspiration and faith. The mind aspiring for Buddhahood is the mind seeking to save all sentient beings. The mind seeking to save all sentient beings is the true faith of the other power. Reb Anderson talks about the futility of that the practice of Zazen can help us realize the futility of depending on personal power. So this is a line in which Zen sounds exactly like, in which the Zen of self-power sounds exactly like other power. We might also say that we can realize the futility of relying on other practice, other power. So the practices that we start with the practices of breath counting, and even the practices of following the breath, or advanced koan study. These are practices that we can use if our faith isn't fully developed. In the words of Reb Anderson, he says, such practice may help one forge a strong enough container to tolerate a non-gaining approach to meditation. So often the gaining approach is our path in. I used to think that the other power, faith-based expressions of Dharma, were for those poor, sorry people who didn't have the smarts or the gumption or the courage or the whatever to practice the effort-based approaches to Dharma. I have kind of recently come to see that, in a way, effort in practice is something we console ourselves with until we develop the faith to just sit and do nothing. And increasingly for me, self-power and other power really just aren't two things. Practice, Reb Anderson, practice does not abide in and cannot be defined of the things we are aware of at the moment. So your zazen practice, your zazen, your shikantaza, isn't dependent on the content of your mind. Doesn't matter whether it's jumpy and moving all over the place. Doesn't matter whether it's containing beautiful, luminous, enlightened thoughts, burning, angry, sharp, hateful thoughts. All of those things are just content, and your zazen practice does not depend on content. So we often have the sense or the certainty that we're the worst Zen student in the room, or on the retreat, or that the thing that we're doing obviously can't be right. So how exactly would you know that? One of our teachers in Balanced Way, David Ronick, says that your practice is none of your business. So where can you stand to know for certain that your practice is truly transcendently inadequate? What is that? What is that that knows? That is just thought content. And often what happens when we judge our practice inadequate, when we're sure that our mind is clearly dysfunctional, is not doing the thing that a Zen mind really should do, often that thought is the thought that's kind of at the boundary between, you know, when a thought has just wandered off into grasping and aversion or in storytelling or wherever it goes, and then we notice, oh my gosh, I was doing that grasping and aversion and storytelling. I'm going to practice with my breath. I'm going to come back to the breath, back to the posture, back to one. So the thought goes here. We remember that we're practicing zazen. We come back. And then the first thought we give rise to then is, so that proves that I'm not a good Zen student. And that's actually another story. And so we, in a way, that part of what we're doing there is beginning each return to our posture, to our breath, to just sitting upright, with a conviction of having failed already in the past. And it's really an unnecessary step. So much of zazen is about just peeling back one layer, going back one layer of the infinite regression. And so we come back and we start with this belief that we have just, the thing that has just transpired has been, objectively speaking, non-zazen. And we have that belief. And we believe that belief. So if we can skip one of those believings, it doesn't matter which one, if we can just let go at any step, we might even believe that we believe that we, and then if we can just cut it down to just seeing that, then, you know, we see the way in which our zazen, even with the storytelling and the coming back and the belief, is one uninterrupted, seamless whole. That's the samadhi of a wandering mind. That's the toji samadhi, the holding or seeing all things equally. And that's the samadhi that isn't so fragilely dependent on any kind of mental or psychic acrobatics that you can or cannot do. Reb Anderson says that in the beginning of our familiarity, our coming to know the Dharma, our coming to see the Dharma as omnipresent in our lives, we may need forms to help us relate to the formless. This is the formless. This world of form is the formless. But until we see for ourselves what those words mean, they're just words that really mean nothing. And I spent a long time hearing my first teacher, Daido, say form is exactly emptiness, emptiness is exactly form, and just screaming in my head, what the hell are you talking about? What could that possibly mean? That makes no sense whatsoever. And then at some point, I kind of, both gradually and suddenly, and then gradually again, and then started to see that that was really a really simple, precisely literal, and utterly transparent expression of the way things are. But it doesn't matter whether you have that realization or don't have that realization. You can use the forms to relate to the formless. Do it using the forms of zazen is precisely relating to the formless. It doesn't matter whether or not you have the belief that you are relating to the formless or not. The forms themselves are an expression of it. Reb Anderson is talking about zazen, the practice of zazen, of sitting on our cushion, as a ceremony. And what's part of what's wonderful about this is the ceremony is entirely composed of sitting still. It's just that one element, sitting still, is the ceremony. And this ceremony, here's Rev Anderson, is for tempering our tolerance for a formless practice that we cannot do. You cannot do formless zazen. You can only do the zazen of form. Formless zazen cannot be done. Can't be done by ourselves, and it can't be done by anyone else. Can't be done on our own, can't be done for us. And so we do the ceremony to temper, to strengthen, to expand our tolerance, to be able to hold with equal mind this formless zazen that we can't do. So, when you're sitting there thinking to yourself, well, I clearly can't do zazen. Okay, right on. The accurate perception. And zazen, the zazen ceremony of sitting still amid delusion, is precisely for that state of mind. Precisely for that state of mind that you find yourself in. That I find myself in so often. And then this is the practice of immediately affirming for ourselves not to. This zazen ceremony is a ceremony by which we express and celebrate our devotion to the actual reality of zazen. And here he's using the actual reality of Zazen to refer to the Zazen that we cannot do, as opposed to the Zazen ceremony that we do do. Express and celebrate our devotion. Or we might say, declare and express and actualize and manifest our faith. And again, this is the faith that Shinran calls, it says, the mind seeking to save all sentient beings is the true faith of other power. That's the faith of the Zazen we cannot do. Our physical posture reflects our participation in the ceremony and our participation in the entire universe. So, Zazen isn't not doing anything, it's not nothing. Zazen is sitting still. Zazen is sitting still in the posture of the Buddha. And this posture of the Buddha can also be the posture of, you know, body cast and traction in the hospital. That's the posture of the Buddha. If we're on our cushion, it's the posture, the straight spine, oriented not just towards life, but towards life and death. Greg Anderson goes on to say that when people mistake the ceremony for Zazen itself, they may develop a sense that there is a right way and a wrong way to practice Zazen. And yet, there is a right way and a wrong way to practice Zazen. But not really. So, the meaning of Zazen is not brought forth by the power of personal effort and is not brought forth by the power of others. We can't do it by ourselves, and no one else can do it for us. Self-power and other power are one. And, you know, in a way, part of what this makes it clear, we can't do it ourselves and nobody else can do it for us. Yamada Roshi, who is, I think, our, maybe by now, our third or fourth great grandfather in the Dharma, used to say that all things are one. And then he would add, actually, not even one. So, I am going to wrap it up there. I have been counseled that I sometimes conclude the question and answer period too quickly as people take time to figure out a question or comment or reaction or observation they may want to share. So I'm going to take a big chunk of space in which people may or may not ask questions. Either about the talk, about any piece of the Rev. Anderson recitation that we did. You want to pull it out and consult it as you reflect. Please feel free. Yes, please. Thank you. so you have this abiding belief. But there's also something else important going on there. But I do want to point out that there's this other underlying assumed belief that doing something needs to feel one way and not another way. Yes. So, some teachers talk about that not awareness of what's happening as samadhi. I think that that is actually that kind of non-awareness is just another one of the myriad states that we may encounter, and we can use that other samadhi, Toji samadhi, the samadhi of holding all things with equal mind. And so, and all of your thoughts and opinions about that space where nothing has happened, all aren't there when it's not happening. They're only here now about that other thing that's now drifted into the past. And so this is where that issue of do we come back and start right up with our believing, or do we come in and just see that one of, man, I just missed 5 whole hours of sitting. Do we start with grabbing onto that belief and believing it's true, or do we see that just as the tail end of this other thing that we're returning from? And then we return from that thought of, boy, I just missed 5 hours as well. And there's the practices, all of the practices of Sazen, posture, breath, koans, all of them are there for when our faith falters, for when we find that for whatever karmic reason, we can't in this moment tolerate is Reb Anderson's word, tolerate the non-doing nature of Zazen, then we can use these other forms. They're there to help us temper our temper in the sense that we would temper a sword to strengthen it, temper our holding capacity or our non-holding capacity. And it's not actually, faith isn't better than non-faith. Faith isn't better than doubt. Entrusting isn't better than active practice, nor is active practice better than entrusting. Sometimes the thing for us to do, because of the karmic history that leads to us being right here where we are, is returning to the breath. Sometimes we can entrust in a way that gives it all away. And with your particular karma, you can pursue either one. The thing that I want to encourage you towards is to not believe the thought that you're returning to the breath because of having failed at something else, or that you're following your breath or staying with the breath or joyfully appreciating breath practice it's not a success and it's not a failure. That's just sitting still with the breath. And the discomfort the kind of uncertainty, quicksandy nature of starting to move into this not knowing of, am I doing it? Am I not doing it? Is it me who's doing it? Is something happening? Is it not happening? That what I want to encourage you to do is to not prematurely and, you know, as a kind of rule of thumb, crush that down. Make that kind of quicksandy thing into a concrete set. Mizumi Roshi's, like, dying, his death poem, whatever, reminded us to play freely in samadhi. And this is the samadhi of equal mind. This is the samadhi that is present when we're following our breath, is present when we don't know if we're following our breath or not, and is present when the ceremony of zazen is the expression of it itself. And you were also using the word celebration, whereas the word that Reb Anderson uses is ceremony. I think that there's an important difference there, because a celebration is like this thing we're supposed to be doing, celebrating, being right here. Whereas the ceremony is just sitting still. So great work. Which is why we say, don't follow the breath. Which is why we say, come back to the breath, come back to the practice, come back to mind. Intimately inhabit this. But all of these things, all of these instructions, even instructions such as come back to the breath, stop following thoughts, even those instructions are just provisional. They're just skillful means. They aren't ultimate things in themselves. They're just devious tricks that the Zen teachers and ancestors use to help us realize the abiding perfection of things as they are, including our thoughts. So, come back from those thoughts. Do keep practicing coming back from those thoughts. And do notice when the judgment comes at the tail end of those, boy, that was really some bad zazen because I was lost in my thoughts. And then see if you can start practicing right there with breaking the chain of believing. It's fine for that thought to arise. That thought of those thoughts over there in the past were clearly bad stuff. It's fine for that false thought to arise. But then just carry on doing your zazen without adding in that extra step of believing this story you just started telling yourself about those thoughts. And that doesn't mean that this thought is true, this thought is not true, those are bad, those are good. It doesn't mean any of those things, because you're just not going there. We're just not stepping into that realm of judging, of assessing. This is what the third ancestor says. This heavy burden weighs you down, so why keep judging good and bad? That's what affirming faith mind says, and that's what we're continually doing. And it's fine. It's fine to keep judging good and bad. And at any point, but the thing is that there's this thing we do with our mind in which thoughts about zazen, thoughts that judge our practice, are in some way, we're putting in this special category of things, of thoughts that can be definitely true, whereas these other thoughts about man, I wish I had a hamburger. That's clearly just a thought. But thought about my practice. Well, that's just a true description of reality. And they're actually not two categories of things. And if we're only practicing partial zazen, if we're only letting go of thoughts that aren't about, for instance, how bad our practice is. Right? But those thoughts we hold on to, and we beat ourselves with, and we keep them around, and if they ever pass, then we go and grab them and bring them back. So, do come back, do go, do come back. But notice when that believing kicks in. And recognize believing as believing, rather than as an expression of ultimate truth. Believing is just another mental formation. It's another thing minds do, just like thinking and reacting.
From either direction, it's sort of the middle way, it's like that balancing on the edge of a coin or something.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
So I don't see it coming back as sort of
so you're describing
point. It's just, to me it's more like
so you're describing your experience. That's what it's like for you, and that's perfectly expressed. And I think that you also bring up really a really important point about the non-suppression in the middle way. So is there any, and so in all of that true and lovely description of your inner experience, is there any believing going on? What about when you're on the edge of the coin? Is there any believing? There's the belief. Belief is that there's some success.
Yeah. Wow, really good at this time.
Right.
I'll do it really good next time.
So, so you're giving a really lovely description of kind of fairly loosely holding the practice of effortful presence. And it's a perfect place to be. It's a perfect place to stay. And I want to encourage you to explore what would it be like to do exactly what you're describing, but with 50% less effort, 50% less doing, bringing in of agency and fiddling those knobs of zazen to get the optimal zazen settings. So just look for that and explore that and see what that is, and bring that to Doksan.
Mm-hmm. I got the impression that when he said there is not a little thing, it's just the silence. I got the impression that the little thing is just being. So it's like if I tell you to, you know, use our pen, what I'm really saying is just be.
It isn't that it's just being, it's that it's beingness itself, which is and just be you there, just be that's something that you do, and it's way too small if I'm just supposed to just be, but it's all of this, it's this beingness, it's this interpenetrated thing of which this is a piece of it and the whole of it, and so is that, and so are you, and so are the fish, and so is global warming, and so is confusion and delusion and stillness and movement. And all of that is, that's the Sambhogakaya, the expression body of the Dharmakaya, which is the one thing, which is just this. So yes. That's not true. And that's not true in a really, really important way. So you're putting a really huge condition on what's required of you. It's required that you be alive, which means that you are definitely going to fail. Like everyone else, because you're going to die. So you're going to fail later.
Exactly.
So you can just, you got that. And this is a practice that doesn't fail you even then.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but in the relative way, I mean, this is my experience. For me, it really helped when I realized that it's impossible to be wrong.
Yes, so up until you added the condition on which it's impossible to do it wrong, you're totally right on. It is impossible to do that. That's right. And so I am quibbling a little bit at a cross levels thing, but it's an important point that I want you to really hear and hold. And yes, you found one of the underlying core previously unexamined beliefs that was driving all of these thoughts one way or the other. You know, there's a way in which striving and non-striving are like, you know, and that thought of I'm doing it wrong, and the thought of but of course there's no way to do it wrong. Like those things are like matter and antimatter, or poison and antidote, but that they're mutually annihilating. And It is sometimes valuable to use the kind of counterthought of the counterthought to I'm doing it wrong, which is this is not a practice that can be done wrong. And then those two thoughts become, you know, self-annihilating, and then you're left with neither of those. But what doesn't happen is that one eats the other one and then remains, you know? Keep doing that and entertain what if it's even less conditional than that. All of our conditions, we so wanna make rules, put a little box, define it as undefinable.
I think you told me that the thing the purpose was to appreciate and live in the perfect moment, or be in the perfect moment.
The moment is perfect, and we all moments. That's a description of reality.
So, if a thought comes into your mind and then you let it go, and it redirects your thoughts, and that's a moment, and then you're coming back, it's a different moment. There's no, you shouldn't, I mean, the guilt or whatever about not doing it right or wrong, it's, I mean, that just shouldn't be fine, because you're in the moment, 2 seconds ago you had that thought, now you're in another moment, but you're still in those moments, and isn't that the point? Just the
There's a way in which that's true, and part of what you are, part of what this is the Zen practice of Shikantaza, which is a practice that is normally something we take up after we've built a foundation of doing this other practice, of doing breath practice. And so this is something in this particular context that if you wanted to pursue this line of questioning, I would encourage you to come to one of the times when we do Dokusan interviews where we can talk about it one-to-one. But in the meantime, I want to encourage you to just stick with this practice, this unelaborated practice of wherever your mind goes, whenever it goes, back to the breath, back to the posture, back to one, back to the stillness, back to one. And stick with that for a while, and then let that kind of unfold. So let's put up there. Thank you guys all for your heartfelt and excellent participation. Good work, everyone.